Support for podcasting on KBIA comes from Grindstone Fitness Studio, a full-service gym offering equipment for traditional exercise like weight and cardiovascular training, as well as specialized classes. Choices include personal training, spinning, yoga, Pilates, and more. All classes taught by certified professionals. More information is available at 443-4447, Grindstone Fitness Studio, 3005 Chinaberry Drive in Columbia.
From KBIA and the Reynolds Journalism Institute, on air and online, this is a special edition of Intersection.
Hello and welcome to a special edition of Intersection, live from the Missouri State Fair in Sedalia. I'm Ryan Famuliner. Started in 1901, the State Fair has since become an annual tradition and is a yearly celebration of Missouri's agriculture, fine art, and food, among other things. Today on Intersection, we'll speak to a couple of future farmers of America and get an insider's view of some of the competitions. Throughout the show, we'll also present some sights and sounds of the festival, which runs through August 18th. Joining me now for the first half hour of our show, Mark Wolf is the Missouri State Fair Director. He's held that position since 2009. Mark, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
And David Dick is the Livestock Superintendent of the fair, who can also talk with us a little bit about the history of the fair. David, thanks for being here.
Thank you.
All right. And we'd love to hear from you and our audience as well. Unfortunately, this week we don't have the capability to bring your calls on the air because we are on location, but you can still submit your questions and comments by email to intersection@kbia.org. You could also tweet us at IntersectKBIA. Now, we're going to talk a lot later in the show about the fair, the things we talked about there in the intro. But first, I think we kind of need to address the news of the day. It's gone to national news over the last 48 hours or so. On Saturday afternoon, or at night, rather, during a rodeo, one of the performers, a rodeo clown, which helps corral bulls and performs during the rodeo, dressed up as President Barack Obama wearing a mask. And the videos of the incident show many in the crowd cheering as someone on the loudspeaker yells, "Go get him, President Obama." So one report says another rodeo clown walked up and started bobbing the lips of the mask. Since photos and reports of the event went viral over the last 2 days, many Missourians and some politicians have been expressing their unhappiness about this incident. So Mark Wolf, just wanted to start as the fair director, wanted to see what you had to say about that incident at this point and what you know about it.
Well, absolutely. We had an event Saturday night, late in the evening at the tail end of our rodeo event over at the State Fair Arena. I was not there at that time. I was dealing with some other issues on the fairgrounds and was informed Sunday morning by one of my commissioners that we needed to investigate an issue that had occurred over at the State Fair Arena involving one of the rodeo clowns dressed up like President Obama, he was very disturbed by what he had heard. And so immediately following our get-together that morning, I contacted the superintendent at the State Fair Arena. He got in touch with the folks from MRCA, which is our contracted rodeo organization, Missouri Cowboy Rodeos Association. And I would say within 15 minutes, one of the members was in my office. I immediately, based on the information I had at that time, expressed my displeasure in what had occurred over there, that was something that we're not going to deal with out here. Just an unconscionable stunt by one individual who took advantage of the opportunity with a microphone during a paid event to go out there and do something like that. And, first and foremost, on behalf of myself and the State Fair Commission and our entire staff and the Missouri Department of Agriculture, we apologize to everyone, including our president, over what occurred over there. It is certainly not something that's condoned by the State Fair. It is not what the State Fair is about. And I just can't express the disappointment we have that occurred over there. And we just want to apologize to folks.
Mm-hmm. And maybe you could help us understand, too, I guess, how that could have happened, I guess. The fact maybe people don't even know necessarily what the rodeo clown's role is there in some of these performances. But how? What's the chain of command there, and who would have known about this before it had happened?
Well, we're still investigating a little bit about the incident. Obviously, the clown himself may be the second one that was involved, obviously. This was not a planned event, evidently, as far as the MRCA was concerned. It's their show. We pay them in a contracted form to put on that rodeo event. Obviously, the clown in a rodeo event is part of the entertainment, supposed to be, and it's supposed to be comical, but it's supposed to be family-oriented, and in this instance, it appears that the lead clown out on the ground or out on the arena floor, maybe the announcer involved, as we're still investigating that. There was some banter that got going on this. And then, of all things, for the crowd to sit there and cheer on something like that is very disappointing also. So, it's happened. Nothing we can do about that at this point other than apologize to folks and make sure it's not going to happen again. Mm-hmm. I let those folks know immediately that morning those members of their crew were not to be back on this fairgrounds permanently for any reason. And as we check into this farther, anybody else that we find that was involved in that will be treated likewise. We will certainly be reviewing any kind of opportunity to contract again with the MRCA. I will tell you they've been a long-time partner out here. I think they're a fine organization, have always done a great job, and I know for a fact that their board is extremely upset by what occurred, and I do believe it was contained to two or three individuals that decided they thought that something like that would be funny.
And so it is a contracted event, so ultimately that's about all the state fair can do, I suppose. So, but then you know anything of possible ramifications?
Well, I would assume that the MRCA will definitely deal with their own in this case. Beyond us saying you're not allowed to use them back out here in our facility under, you know, whether it's that organization or another rodeo company, those individuals are banned in terms of performing on our fairgrounds. And as we find out more, there could be other penalties brought. And, but I would certainly believe that the folks from MRCA will address this very firmly and very matter-of-factly. And I would assume those people probably won't be a part of that organization.
In the aftermath of this event and things getting posted online, many people were weighing in, Missouri politicians, Missourians, about their unhappiness with the situation. Some politicians were actually calling for the state to look at the funding they provide to the state fair. I don't know if you've seen those claims yet and saying that the state should be looking at that. What's your response to that as far as this event having those sort of possible ramifications?
Well, I believe first and foremost, I hate to see agriculture and what the fair is all about and the history of this fair and the kids that we're supporting out here and the good side of the fair be penalized as a whole because of the actions of one. Obviously this was an atrocious act and I wish we could have been there and got it stopped. And it's one of those things that, you're always at risk, and it's not just here at the fair. It's at any other venue anywhere in the world. When somebody has a microphone and they're expected to be professionals and do a professional job at something, there has to be a certain amount of trust that they will do that. And in this case, obviously this gentleman that was the clown that night and maybe some co-conspirators in this issue took advantage of that. And by the time they went out and started doing it, obviously the damage is being done. I have heard that it may have gone on as long as 15 minutes, and that really disturbs me. I don't know what our folks were thinking over there, or their folks, I should say. They're in control of that. But obviously, I would think that the announcer in the stand would have probably had an opportunity to turn that off or stop that. Did not happen. So, the penalty phase of what happened as far as those folks are concerned is not done. And we will certainly be reviewing whether or not we will be looking at moving forward with any kind of contract in the future with those folks until we have some things decided and reviewed.
Yeah, and for that matter, what else may this change about the way you guys handle performers in the future? I know it's early on to think about that, but...
Well, I can tell you that just through the conversation this morning, as we've continued to deal with this, and, obviously we want to reply to people, and we are obviously being overwhelmed here at the fair, myself and our staff and everybody here from across the country with some fairly scathing, probably not appropriate remarks our direction over this event also. And, that's a little tough to take. Obviously, this is not something we planned and certainly don't condone. And we're doing everything that we can to correct this issue as best we can. And beyond that, we our sincere apologies to certainly the President of the United States and everyone that was offended by it, because we're offended by it. And, moving forward, we're looking at contract changes for all our contracts. It will include required sensitivity training and some things like that. State employees have to do that. I see no reason why some of our contractors may not have to follow those same guidelines, and maybe these folks need a little training about how to act out in public.
And I'm not hearing from you. Some comments, there's been a lot of comments about this, but some comments are saying, hey, people poke fun at presidents, at politicians all the time. I'm not hearing that from you.
I I think that's inappropriate in any situation. You know, there's something that goes along with being the president of the United States that I think, whether you agree with the politics of the sitting president or not, that requires a certain amount of respect. And I think to do something like what happened over there the other night is extremely disrespectful. And, the consequences for that, I'm sure, are going to be long and lasting with the gentleman that was involved, or the others who might have been involved.
Sure. Well, I do want to remind our listeners that this is Intersection, a program of KBIA and the Reynolds Journalism Institute. I'm Ryan Famuliner, and today on the show, we're live from the Missouri State Fair in Sedalia. We'll be talking about the importance of the fair to the agriculture industry in the state, as well as the past and future of the fair. Joining me on the show, Mark Wolf is the Missouri State Fair Director, and David Dick is the Livestock Superintendent of the fair. And for you and our audience, what do you think of the incident involving a rodeo clown dressed up as President Obama over the weekend? Share your thoughts. Email us at intersection@kbia.org. You could also tweet us at intersectkbia. We'd like to remind those of you that you listening to this as a rebroadcast that you can watch this intersection as streaming video online during our live conversations every Monday afternoon at 2 at kbia.org. You can also watch that video and join our online chat by going to kbia.org and scrolling down to the link for intersection. Again, that's Mondays at 2 online at kbia.org. I just have one more question about you, about this incident before we move on to some of the other things we'd like to talk about today, Mark Wolf. So some of the people that have been commenting about this, including state legislators, have also referred to this as a racist incident. I wanted to see what your thoughts are. I know you're still trying to figure out exactly what happened, but your thoughts on that accusation and, again, how that may affect what's going forward here.
Well, I believe it is a little bit of a racial issue, a racist issue when you do something like that. I've heard all the comments and, if it had been, this president or that president, but I feel like the level of disrespect is the same regardless. And, in my mind, we're not going to differentiate on our behalf one way or another. It was an inappropriate act, an unconscionable stunt. I just can't fathom what was going on in these folks' head to pull something like that. And, and a lot of disappointment in the crowd. I'm sure not everyone in the crowd was cheering, but obviously, apparently, there was some, quite a bit of that going on, and I'm disappointed to see that happened also. So, one of those things that has happened. We can't prevent it from happening at this point, and we're doing the best to deal with a really stressful situation for our staff with so much else going on. Unfortunately, it took away from. A great fair up to this point. We've had great weather, great crowds, great attendance. The kids are doing great. Our entry numbers are good. Everything about the fair is a family-oriented event, and to have something like this happen takes so much away from that, I'm just extremely disappointed about that.
Okay. Well, yeah, moving on, I guess, on that same thought, we talked about it earlier, the funding that comes from the state to run the fair. Why do we still have a fair every year? What are the reasons for having it? If you were trying to, if you had to sit in front of a committee and say, why should we keep giving funds? Why is this important?
I think the state fair is an important part of the history of our state. First of all, I think it's a great way to promote agriculture in our state. We're the number one showcase for agriculture in our state, as is the case in many states with their state fairs. And it's a great there's a great history there about. The reasons why they started having fairs initially and why they continue today. I don't think, as I said earlier, punishing the overall concept of the fair and what the fair is all about over the actions of one, idiot, is probably the best way to address it. And, I would hope that the folks in legislators and the legislature would, we'd be happy to have conversation with them. And I think there are a lot of them that don't feel that way, but I think, the gut reaction when something like this pops up is, it brings that kind of response. And, hopefully we'll have an opportunity to talk with those folks and put in place things to preventive measures maybe to help us not have something like that happen in the future. And so, I would be very disappointed to see, the state fair be taken away from the citizens of Missouri or anybody else's state fair anywhere, over the actions of one person. And, I think that focus, our focus now ought to be on that and dealing with him and then those whoever may have been involved with him to do that. So,
all right. Well, David Dick, you've sat here and been very patient for us. We appreciate that. But maybe it's a good time to bring you in because Mark there mentioned the history of the fair and why it started and why it's still around. Maybe help us with that. What were the situations when the state fair was founded? And obviously that's changed a lot over time.
Yes and no. Yeah. I mean, the premise of the fair was, you know, we use it a lot as a focus for youth and the activities there. It's also an educational event. And the primary thing at the beginning of the fair was the educational side of it, whether it's livestock genetics, whether it's improvements mechanically, things that, you know, methods of cooking and preserving food. I mean, there's just a whole host of educational things that were a part of the first fair and have always been promoted as part of the fair.
Right. And so, but then I guess how have things, what has changed in the last 20 years, say, when technology has really advanced, and also some of the population of the state shifted, too. I mean, it was a much more rural state in its history.
Well, yeah, I'd say in 1901, probably 80% of the folks, you know, had a connection to the farm or understood the food production process, and I'd say probably now 90% of the people or more don't have that connection. And so you've got this gap of folks that kind of get where they, you know, they like to eat, but they're really interested, too, in how it got to their plate. And that's fair. And so I think we can provide that connection. They can come in, they can see the livestock, and they can see some of the methods that we handle them by. The other piece of that is on our livestock shows, you know, the steer shows tomorrow. We were 3 years. It was the third or fourth fair before we ever had a steer show. We showed market heifers first. And the technology reverse on that is they were spayed heifers in, and now they're not. And so you kind of have some old and new. You know, the steers, you look at those things, it's all about the carcass, it's about the carcass merits, how did you get there, how much feed, how many days, what percent fat to lean, the size of the ribeye, you know, all those pieces that now we can do scan tests on them. You know, they come here, they had a live evaluation of the carcass steers this morning. The judge will look at all the steers tomorrow, and then, you know, we'll get the real data and have those results by Saturday. So, you know, the timeliness of the event is really... speed-wise, we know a lot more.
Mm-hmm. Well, and so who is, all the shows you mentioned, who is actually bringing, we'll have some people from FFA on later as well, but who
sure.
But who are the people that are bringing their cattle or their pigs or whoever?
Sheep.
To, yeah, their sheep,
goats,
whatever. Yeah.
They're 4-H and FFA kids. I, you know, a good rule of thumb, and most of our livestock shows, about 85% of those are youth-driven. You know, and then you have that adult side that's always there. The good breeders and good marketers of those different individual species are there. But it's kind of fun to watch those kids because they are their 4-H projects, their FFA project. There's a learning tool as part of that. You know, getting acquainted with the animal. How do you feed for it? The different ways to, you know, make that heifer on into a, you know, a cow, et cetera, et cetera. So it's all part of that. But you know, it's fun to watch sometimes a little 4-H girl beat that guy that's been in business for 40 years in the show ring. So there's always that competitive side of it, too.
Mm-hmm. Well, and then I guess, too, those are the kids that are probably already in a rural environment. But then what are the other efforts? We're sitting right here next to a kid stage, too. What are the efforts? And, Mark, maybe you could weigh in on this, too, the efforts to try to get to that young population. Because obviously that's a pretty big group of who's coming to the
fair. It's really been exciting on the livestock side because they've gone into those sheep and goat projects. And really the poultry has really kind of exploded because they are easy. You know, it's easy to keep chickens in the backyard. It's, you don't have to have, you know, 5 or 10 acres to keep a goat or a lamb project. So those projects have really seen a huge growth. You know, what we've seen up at the swine barn, you know, a lot of growth this year, almost all youth driven. And so, and it's folks kind of reconnecting with that. Again, it goes back to the food supply. They want to be a little more familiar. They're not afraid of maybe raising the hog and then having that, you know, as part of their food supply at home. And it's just different advantages that maybe people have stepped away from and are not going to step back into.
And why is that important to bring the youth in, to make sure the youth are interested in agriculture?
Well, the youth are the future. I mean, they have to learn, you know, and grasp the new technology so that we keep this food production process as viable and efficient as possible to keep... You know, there are not very many less people every day. There's more people every day, so you have to be able to feed those.
Mm-hmm. And, Mark, I guess, too, yeah, what different strategies has the fair been looking at? I know you've been on for a few years now, but what, as far as targeting these young people and especially those that aren't already in rural environments?
You know, I think one of the things that we have enjoyed shifting to a little bit here at the fair is a little more emphasis on the technology that's available. You know, through our science activities, our robotics, which was going on this past weekend, or maybe still going on today, over in the assembly hall. So, you know, I think a little bit of the message out there is you don't necessarily have to own acreage, live in a rural area, that there are opportunities for employment down the road or whatever that can be directly involved with agriculture because of the technology side. Used to make the joke just a few years ago, you know, the day was coming when the farmer would sit on his back porch and drink his coffee and watch his tractor go plant the field. Well, guess what? You know, there's GPS systems in these tractors now. I think most of the guys ride with them, obviously, but they're going to turn around at the end of the field, and the GPS picks it up and steers it back down the field, and so their rows are nice and straight, and they, you know, they maximize the productivity of that piece of land. And so, you know, there are a lot of opportunities in agriculture now on the technology side that didn't used to exist, and I think we have started down the right road the last 4 years, starting to put some emphasis on that and show people that there are possibilities, you know, as far as careers go, involved in agriculture that really doesn't require you to be, a farmer.
Well, I want to take a moment to remind our listeners that this is Intersection, a program of KBIA and the Reynolds Journalism Institute. I'm Ryan Famuliner, and today we're live from the Missouri State Fair in Sedalia. We're talking about the importance of the fair to the agriculture industry in the state, as well as the past and future of the fair. Joining me on the show, Mark Wolf is the Missouri State Fair Director, and David Dick is the Livestock Superintendent of the fair. We'd also love to hear from you and our audience. Do you plan on going to the state fair this year? What are you most looking forward to? Let us know by writing us at intersection@kbia.org, or you can tweet at intersectkbia. One thing that was kind of interesting when I was looking at the website for the state fair was that it called the state fair a barometer of the state's economic health. I wondered if that was a challenge, maybe over the last 5 years or so. Obviously, we're just coming out of a recession, many would say. And so what's the situation? How has that been true, I guess, or has it been true in the last 5, 10 years?
Well, I think the agriculture community in our state are the conservative side of running a business, that mentality. I mean, they understand, you know, hey, you're not guaranteed that income. Mother Nature plays a big role in that all the time. And with the tougher economy since the end of 2008 and moving forward to today, the fair really hasn't suffered. And, you know, I know a lot of other folks involved with state fairs across the country. And, the fair industry as a whole has done very well. We were contacted by a lot of folks last year through the media that were concerned or wanted to know what was going to be the effect of the drought here in Missouri and, the loss of the obvious potential loss of revenue and, you know, were we seeing our entry numbers fall off? And they didn't. And obviously part of the reason is, you know, if you've got a lot of money invested in a show steer, you're not going to go sell him because you can't afford to feed him. You're going to feed him. And so they brought him to the fair and they participated. So, Missourians are a resilient bunch, you know, when it comes to dealing with Mother Nature and the things that sometimes are out of our control, I guess, and moving forward with their heads up.
Right. And David, I'm sure, I mean, I know historically, actually, weather and like we're talking about weather patterns and economic conditions have affected the fair many times.
Sure, always. Yeah. And, we look at those, the 2 years of drought, typically on our end, on the cattle end, that's where the third year you begin to see the reduction in the numbers, and we haven't seen that. We're actually up in what our entry numbers are and shown through the ring. The other part of that is they'll come looking for that new technology, whether it's a solar pump, whether it's wind power, the different things that will help them produce water from other sources. So,
well, moving on, what are some of the, we've talked a lot about the rodeo, but in a negative context so far, what are some of the most popular things at the fair for attendees, I guess? We've talked a lot, too, on the people that are working at the fair, but what are some of the most popular things that happen here at the fair for someone who's never been here?
I guess it depends on what you like. For some, it's that first foot long corn dog. That'd be me, first foot long corn dog. You know, I got to get that the first day and kind of kicks off my fair. This year, everybody wants to come see what's new at the fair. And this year, we're just kind of unique. It hadn't happened in a long time, but we actually had a new structure built here on the fairgrounds, the new MFA Youth Livestock Arena. Phenomenal facility, something that we had needed out here for a long time. And, it was done through private funding. And so we're real proud of that. The Missouri State Fair Foundation headed up that effort. And we ended up with a really, really nice amenity to our facilities out here. Obviously, David and his folks are really enjoying that during the fair this year, and it'll be a boom to our off season in terms of equine shows and such. So, you know, that was one of those new things that's really caught everybody's eye this year, and one of those things that's kind of exciting to see at the fair. So, I'm sure David has got some ideas about what his first fair thing is too. But
that's pretty high on the list. That one right there. It's easy to see right when you come through the main gate. It's right there to your right. But a lot of people that aren't farm oriented, they like to go to that children's barnyard first. and they come right on around a corner, and they like to go to the livestock barns, and they want to see that because it's not something that they see every day. It's not in a zoo scenario. You know, they're real life. They're right there in front of you, and so that part's good. Conservation building, folks like to go down there and see the fish and those kind of things. But it's just like Mark said, a lot of people have those things that they like to see, and I can tell you they're here and they're scattered all over the grounds.
Mm-hmm. Well, and Mark, one other thing you mentioned there too was the off-season. What happens to the fairgrounds during the off-season? Obviously, it's pretty busy for the weeks that's going on, the fair's going on, but what else happens here?
Our facility is year-round. We operate it year-round. We have 22 full-time employees out here. Half of those folks are maintenance folks that maintain the state's facility, and we have about 450 off-season event days a year out here, and that's calculated based on if you have eight on one day, that's eight event days, you know, if you have eight events going on. So, anywhere between 400 and 475 event days a year, not counting the 11 days of the fair. So, we generate somewhere in the neighborhood of $500,000 a year in additional revenue to the facility just through our off-season rental. And, the facility here is obviously fairly old. We've got buildings right next door that were built in 1903. So we've got a lot of old buildings out here, very well built, but a lot of maintenance issues on a constant basis. And the off-season use is really good for them in the term or the sense that we have people in them. So when we have mechanical issues or building flaws or things come along, you find those quickly and you can repair them. It's kind of like your rental house sitting there for months not being rented. Next time you walk in, the roof's been leaking and you didn't know it. You've got a lot of damage. So I think it really benefits us. And then on the same token, it allows us to generate some revenue back to the fair for that operation. Mm-hmm.
We do have a couple of comments from guests in the chat room I wanted to throw out here. One of them was saying, we were talking about earlier, the fair is a great place for people to see and enjoy agriculture and livestock presentations. This would be the only opportunity for some to see a small window of how farm-to-market actually works. Absolutely. And like I said, that's something, David, you were talking about that's been targeting lately.
You betcha. You know, going into that on-foot market show today with the steers or what they do at swine barn, same thing, where somebody that does that for a profession, buys cattle for a profession, You'll get to see that glimpse of what they're looking for and how that fits into the marketplace and what they have on their plate.
We had another comment that was related to the way we started the conversation, so I wanted to go to that before we go to a short break here. The comment from the guest was, why would the clown think that the Obama mask would be funny? Question his judgment, but it probably wasn't a racist action like some of the media are trying to portray it. The announcer could have shut it down, too, and chose not to do so. I guess that is something to look at. I think you mentioned that as part of your investigation, that announcer's role in the whole situation, too.
Yeah, there again, not having been there and witnessed it personally, you know, we're trying to get, we're investigating what went on over there and who was involved. And unfortunately, it does appear that the announcer may have had the opportunity, I assume he would have known how maybe, and maybe he didn't, to pull the plug on the event in terms of the microphone or the speaker that the microphone that the clown had. So, we'll figure out all the details as we move forward here over the next few days, and we'll deal with them very firmly, I'm sure.
And we have one more comment from Art Langston before we go into the break. While some ribbing or satire might be expected for any president, by all accounts, this episode was more like a neo-Nazi Klan rally. Forget politics or personalities. No fair event should make any citizen who attends not merely offended, but fearful for their safety. That's even more important than disrespect or insult to a public figure. We're going to go to a short break. This is Intersection, a program of KBIA and the Reynolds Journalism Institute. Today we're live from the Missouri State Fair in Sedalia. We're talking about the importance of the fair to the agriculture industry in the state, as well as the past and future of the fair. Joining me on the show, Mark Wolf is the Missouri State Fair Director, and David Dick is the Livestock Superintendent of the fair. I'm Ryan Femuliner. We'll be right back after a short break.
You're listening to KBIA 91.3 FM, your NPR station. Stay with us for more of Intersection. KOMU 8 News is coverage you can count on. Get accurate, balanced, and in-depth news coverage from KOMU 8, where the highest values of journalism are taught and practiced every day. Tune in tonight for KOMU 8 News at 5, 6, and 10.
Classic a cappella sound and your favorite contemporary music. It's Straight No Chaser. Catch Straight No Chaser and their Under the Influence tour live at the Missouri Theater Wednesday, October 16th. Tickets now at 882-3781 or at concertseries.org. Sponsored by MU Libraries and the Columbia Missourian.
visit our website, kbia.org, to access the latest newscasts and features from KBIA News, plus web-only images, audio, and video, and watch video of today's intersection, views of the news, global journalist, and radio friends with Paul Pepper. It's 2:30. More of Intersection is next.
Welcome back to Intersection, a program of KBIA and the Reynolds Journalism Institute. I'm Ryan Famuliner. Today we're live from the Missouri State Fair in Sedalia. We're talking about the importance of the fair to the agriculture industry in the state, as well as the past and future of the fair. Unfortunately, the rain at the state fair has moved us indoors today, although now it's clear, but it was rain when we started. Fortunately, producer Raymond Tungekar and videographer Travis McMillan visited the state fair on opening day to get some sights and sounds to share today. The rodeo is a big attraction for many fairgoers, and it's also a chance for some brave people to show their stuff.
Shooting. What is that? I haven't come across that.
It's a Western event where cowboys and cowgirls ride horseback and fire pistols and whatnot at targets around the arena.
Are you guys going to check out the rodeo at all?
We already did.
How was it?
Good.
What'd you guys see?
Boom, boom.
Yeah,
big loud noises.
What were they doing at the rodeo?
Shooting these balloons with gunpowder.
They were shooting balloons at the rodeo?
Yeah.
Well, that sounds dangerous. Wow, okay.
It's almost like barrel racing, but instead of barrel racing, they have balloons, like stick holder thingies. Then they put the balloons in there, then they run around the thingy shoot. One of them do.
That one looks like fun.
And they're timed.
I grew up around horses. I mean, I can say I rode them for like 10 years. Ever since I was a kid, I remember going out there and throwing cow patties and all that, hard cow patties or horse patties. Just, you know, hard stuff. Anything I could throw, I'd throw it at my little sister and get in trouble for it.
So you mentioned earlier that you're going to go see some bull riding. Have you actually ever competed at the state fair?
I did it like twice, but it's not as fun as everybody thinks. The general in it, here this body's going, and it's like your adrenaline. You mean you ain't scared of nothing, but once it starts coming at you and it's over with, you're like sitting there thinking, what did I just get myself into? I don't know if it's the money telling you it's fun, or just that belt buckle around your waist, or it's just the money in the belt buckle telling you to go for it. I mean, I guess it's just in your blood at the time, I guess. Anybody can do it. I'm improving. I mean, I'm not the greatest, but I'm looking forward to do it maybe tomorrow night or tonight if I had a chance.
You just heard from John and Carolyn Adams, Blake and Taylor Hicks, and Troy Curitan. Again, thanks to Raymond Tungekar, videographer Travis McMillan, for gathering those sights and sounds of the fair. We're joined now by some new guests this half hour. Mark Wolf, the director of the fair, is still with us, but now we're joined by three people from the Future Farmers of America. Miriam Martin and Mitchell Blem are state officers in FFA. Welcome to the show, Miriam and Mitchell. And Leon Bustaker is an advisor for Missouri FFA. Thanks for joining us, Leon.
Thank you for having us.
All right. And for you and our audience, what are your thoughts on the future of farming in Missouri? Let us know by emailing us at intersection@kbia.org. You can also tweet us at intersectkbia, or you can join our online chat. Well, Miriam and Mitchell, why don't we start with you two? What's your role here at the fair as state officers?
Well, our role here is to serve everyone who's coming to the fair. We work different livestock shows, and we also have the FFA building that we're in charge of keeping all of that in order.
Okay. So how do you prepare for that? What's the year like leading up to the fair? Mitchell?
We recently had a meeting, and we set up what we were going to do on our portion that we were in charge of at the FFA building. And to get that ready, we contacted stakeholders within us to set up things to help make that meeting and help make the booth appropriate for the fair building.
Sure. So what? Obviously, you've probably been in FFA for a while now. What are some of your favorite memories from working and competing at the fair, I guess?
Well, I have grown up showing pigs. That's something that I really enjoy. I've been doing since I was 4 years old. And FFA has absolutely been a way that I've been able to be involved in that. And that's definitely something that I've enjoyed and learned so much from, making friends at the fair and just learning the importance of hard work and responsibility. And it gives you a unique perspective.
And Mitchell, what about you?
I've been in the sheep barn as well, and I really like the opportunity to come see people from across the state that you see once a year at the state fair, and to be able to share your stories of the previous fairs beforehand.
Right. And so, Leon, tell me a little bit more about what some of, obviously there's a wide variety of events and competitions that FFA participants can take part of. What are some of the things that you work on, and maybe tell us a little about some of those different events.
We probably, on a normal year, we'll have almost 10,000 exhibits. The students will exhibit almost 10,000 different items, from ag mechanics to horticulture, agri-science, to the livestock, which is what we've been talking about. And it takes a lot of volunteer labor in order to pull off all the shows. So we've got a lot of agriculture teachers that are here. And what our staff does, we come in for 2 weeks, and we try to facilitate and supervise to make sure the students have the opportunity to exhibit their animals the way they need to.
Right. And so maybe help me a little bit, too, to understand the importance of the fair to people that take part in FFA. Is this something you just look forward to all year?
Sure. You know, we've got, in agricultural education, we have a three-circle model. It's experiential learning, FFA, and classroom instruction. And the experiential learning is giving students the opportunity to take the classroom instruction and to apply it, whether it be raising steers, raising cattle, raising pumpkins, producing an ag mechanics project, and the fair's kind of the goal. You know, we've got kids that'll buy steers in the fall, and they'll work all year long to try to get them to the point where they're just right at fair time.
Is that how it was for you, Mitchell and Miriam, just looking to the fair every year?
Yeah, I believe that the fair also gives all the members the ability to show their supervised agricultural experience to the state. They get the opportunity to use that experience and that ag project, if you say, to be able to present that to people across the state.
And Mark, on the flip side of that, what is the importance of FFA to the fair, I suppose?
Well, I guess I would say that the efforts of FFA and 4-H both combined is really the purpose for what we're doing. We're here to showcase agriculture, but our emphasis is on our youth. They're the future of our agriculture in our state. You may be sitting next to the next director of ag, or the next governor, or the next president here. You just never know. So, I can only tell you that my experience around our folks and these youth in the FFA is inspirational to me. They are heads and tails, I think, a lot of times above their peers, just with their maturity level, their ability to look you in the eye and tell you the story of agriculture and never blink and know what they're talking about. And I was very fortunate this year to get to attend the national convention in Indianapolis, and we walked all over the downtown area in Indianapolis, and I think it was pretty early in the morning one time, and I've never felt safer. I've never seen so many blue coats in my life, and everybody was having a good time, and just an exceptional bunch of youth, and we're extremely proud that what we do here at the fair is kind of geared towards promoting what they're doing.
Sure. But I guess, too, when it comes to, and maybe Leon, you might be good to weigh in on this, too, but when it comes to farming, we talked about in the first half hour how, 100 years ago, 80% of people in the state may have been involved in, or at least somewhat involved in, agriculture. Now it's much smaller than that. Why is getting to a youth population, what are some of the challenges there in talking to young people about this as a career, I guess?
Well, one of the main things we're working on now is, I would guess you'd call it ag literacy, or agricultural advocacy, and we need to educate the public on where food comes from and why we do the things we do in agriculture, if agriculture is to be sustainable that way. You got several generations from the farm, so we've got to work really hard to educate the folks so that we can continue to produce the crops and produce the livestock using the type of technology that you're referring to.
Right. I guess Mitchell and Miriam, I mean, you talk to your friends all the time. They're taking part in FFA. What is that like for you or for your friends trying to make that decision about, could this be something I can do for a living, or am I going to do something else?
Well, I could say my friends, as a majority, don't understand the opportunities within the agriculture industry as a whole. And I think that that's something that we kind of feel is our responsibility, is to help educate them. 1 in 12 jobs is in agriculture today. I think a lot of people don't understand the diversity within the industry and the opportunities that really are out there. So I think we kind of take that. We want to promote and tell our story and help them understand the opportunities that really are out there.
Right. And that's, yeah, as an FFA president, like you said, that's true. But what about just as a friend when you're talking to your friends? How do you tell them you can do this? You don't have to go move to Chicago.
Oh,
or something.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's where the personal story comes in, you know, bringing friends out to my house, understanding my personal involvement in agriculture. It's something that I've been involved with for as long as I can remember. And that's something that they can relate to, whether you live on a farm or in town. That really doesn't matter. There's definitely ways to even get involved.
We have a comment from a guest I wanted to bring in. It says, unfortunately, small and medium-sized family farms are on the decline. We're moving to corporate-owned farms that have no community investment, which drives young people to leave the less populated areas. I imagine the average age of a farmer is upwards of 55. It's not sustainable to the future of family farming. I wonder what any of you would want to react to that comment, I suppose. It's a loaded one.
Well, Leon? I guess what farmers need to do is to diversify and find those niches. There are plenty of niche markets out there, plenty of opportunity. There's still people that have to plant the seed and harvest the crop, and those jobs are available. You may not own the land, but if you want to work in agriculture, production agriculture, there are a lot of opportunities there. And the bigger the farm, the more the higher the level of technology, and somebody's got to work on that machinery and equipment. So a lot of really good opportunities for youth out there in that side of it.
Sure. And Mark, maybe I guess your thoughts in general on the future of the possibility of small family farming or just the farmers on an individual basis.
Well, I agree with what Leon just said. I think there are a lot of opportunities out there. Obviously, you know, the farms have become larger, I guess, over time and more consolidated. And, you know, so what you see is probably less different names, less different families involved in the farming as a separate farming facility. But I think that the opportunities out there are still there in agriculture for, you know, a lot of career opportunities.
Sure. One other thing to talk about with FFA, obviously we talked a lot about this on the show about how, you know, technology changes in the last 10 or 20 years, even a lot of things have changed. What are some of the new things that you do try to learn? Talked about the emphasis on technology, but what are some examples of things that you learn, in FFA that have been changing year to year? Everyone's looking at Mitchell for this one.
I think in my ag classes, when I was in high school, we started focusing on a lot more new technologies such as studying embryo, transplant and AI and things of that nature that weren't used many years ago.
Sure.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty typical to use a GPS system and all the different applications you've got for your cell phone. We can find agricultural uses for a lot of those. But, I mean, just anything involved with technology, it's in the classroom just overnight, and the teachers work really hard to stay current with those kind of things. Everything from the technologies with livestock selection to crop production, the genetic engineering, you know, we've been involved with genetics over the years, but now everything happens so fast. Things change so fast.
Well, I want to remind our listeners that this is Intersection, a program of KBIA and the Reynolds Journalism Institute. I'm Ryan Fumuliner, and today we're live from the Missouri State Fair in Sedalia. We're talking about the importance of the fair to the agriculture industry in the state, as well as the past and future of the fair. We have some new guests on this half hour. Miriam Martin and Mitchell Blim were the state officers in FFA, and Leon Busdeker. Busdeker, did I get that right?
That'll work.
All right. He's an advisor for the Missouri FFA. We want to thank you very much. We're going to say goodbye to you guys here in just a moment. Anything else you'd like to add before we move on?
No, I just I'd like to say from the FFA's point of view that we appreciate the State Fair and all the work they do in giving our students the opportunity. We've got over 26,000 Ag Ed students, 25,000 FFA, and you'll have 1,000 to 2,000 of them that'll exhibit at State Fair. And it's pretty important to their families. It's where everybody comes and spends their summer vacation, and it's pretty important to our program.
All right. Leon, Miriam Mitchell, thank you very much. Enjoy the rest of the State Fair. Again, we sent our producers, Raymond Tungekar, and videographer Travis McMillan out to visit the State Fair on opening day to get some sights and sounds to share today. One of the biggest pastimes, of course, at any State Fair is the food, and so we've got a little bit to show you about that.
Have you tried the food around here as well?
Yeah, there's a good hot place over there in the background. It's called Pub's Barbecue. It's a really good place to eat.
What's your favorite dish from there?
The chicken.
Like, what food are you going to eat today?
Mm-hmm. whatever the kind that gets put in my face.
Yeah. Do you have a favorite one, like hot dogs, funnel cake?
Funnel cake.
Okay.
And ice cream. Funnel cake and ice cream and cake.
That sounds like a really good meal.
I usually go to the Hacienda because my aunt owns it. We got like corn dogs, all kinds of burgers, curly fries, chip fries. It's all real good. I mean, I eat about everything.
What food do you want to get while you're here?
Try to get ice cream.
How about you, AJ? What food are you going to try to eat today?
Grapes.
Grapes? That's very healthy. What about some pizza or hot dogs or
corn dogs?
I want some ice cream. Yeah, how about the Mizzou ice cream?
Welcome back to Intersection, a program of KBIA and the Reynolds Journalism Institute. I'm Ryan Famuliner. You just heard from Laura Pantano, Blake and Taylor Hicks, Troy Kjertsen, and AJ and Emily Schreiner. Thanks again to our producer Raymond Tungekar and videographer Travis McMillan for visiting the State Fair on opening day and telling us a little bit about the food there. Now we switched guests on you again here. So now we're joined again by Missouri State Fair Director Mark Wolf. He's stuck around. And Livestock Superintendent David Dick is back. Now we have Ashley Shane also joining us. She's the superintendent of the Fine Arts Department at the fair. Welcome to the show, Ashley.
Happy to be here.
Yeah, great. And for you and our audience, what are your favorite memories from the State Fair? Let us know by writing us at intersection@kbia.org, or you could tweet at intersectkbia. So I guess first off, we did just show a little segment on the food here. Right when you walk in, there's corn dogs and funnel cakes everywhere. How big of a part is that? Who are the vendors that come and actually sell here? Who are the people that come and sell food and you're buying from?
Well, you know, a lot of our food concessionaires around the fairgrounds are professional concessionaires. They travel from one, fair to the next, and some have been here a long time. They work some long hours in a long year, I believe. I think some of them have about three or four weeks off each year, and then they're right back on the road starting in the southern states. So, you just never know what you're going to find when you come out to the fair when it comes to food. Nice thing about the Missouri State Fair, we've got our commodity groups that produce tremendous food at the pork producers and the Missouri cattlemen. So if you want that kind of home-cooked steak dinner or pork chop dinner, we've got that for you. If you're looking for the latest, greatest fried food, you have to come search it out for yourself. But I've had everything from fried Snickers to fried butter, which a couple years ago was fried Kool-Aid, and I didn't care for that too much either. So everybody wants to know, though, what's the latest, greatest in the fried
food? Yeah, not even sure I know how that would work. But what about you two? What are the strangest things you've tried at the fair?
Alligator.
Oh.
Fried alligator.
Bring that up from down south, I suppose. Ashley, what about you?
Oh, I stick with the corn dogs and the pork place and the beef house. I do. I don't go too far out of bounds there. I do my favorites.
Sure. I suppose you have to be careful sometimes. Right? Yeah, you never know what you're getting into. Well, Ashley, yeah, thanks for joining us. So tell us a little bit about, because that might not be the first thing people think of is art and fine art at the State Fair. Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit about the projects you have going and what your role is here.
Okay. Well, yes, the fine arts probably aren't the first thing that fairgoers think of, but actually, ag and the state of Missouri is very closely related to the fine arts. And what my job is to bring in judges and to promote the fine artists in our building. But like for right now, for instance, we have an artist in residence, Victoria Weaver, upstairs, and she is working with hog intestines for sculptural material. So, I mean, right here on the fairgrounds, I mean, she is using something very outside of the box for some people when they think of fine art, but it's very local to the state of Missouri and to agriculture in general. So we have a lot of artists that are displaying and giving a visual communication of our state, of all different areas. I mean, for artists, you're drawn to landscape, obviously, and people. That's your biggest subject matter. So, it's bringing a visual of our state, and that's the importance, I think, of what we try to do and to promote in the Fine Arts Building.
Sure. We do have a quick comment from one guest that I wanted to run by, I guess, Mark, it may be good to ask you. It says, the farming jobs are there, yes, but what about those who want to have pride of ownership? When corporations own everything, you're just a worker. The big decisions are not yours to make. And David, maybe it'd be good for you. You weren't here for that part of the conversation.
There's a lot of opportunities for ownership in different matters. I mean, you know, USDA has a whole program of young farmer ownership that they finance through their Farm Credit Services is really very active right now. While it's hard to get into that market with land so high and getting those young people back into that process. But there's a lot of different avenues. I think if you search them out, you'll find them. I think some of them may be, you know, right down the road and you don't know it. Somebody may be seeking someone young to take over their operation, willing to help them get started. So,
is that a big part of it, just the generational change that's going on right
now?
Some
of it. You know, there's folks, we rent a farm right across the road. Ladies there, she's in her 90s, but the children aren't there, and so what will happen to that, you know, could become a housing development, but I think probably, you know, it'll stay farm, but that's a century farm. It's a land grant farm, so it's kind of interesting that it's been in that family, you know, since the 1830s and still producing.
Okay, thanks. Well, coming back to the art part of the conversation here for you, Ashley, because I just wanted to throw that comment in while we had it. But there's something you guys have called the Missouri 50.
Yes.
What is that?
The Missouri 50. That is a juried exhibition. So basically, a juried exhibit is one where we send the entries to our judge. This year, it happened to be Hesse McGraw, who is president of exhibitions at the San Francisco Art Institute, and he selects the 50 works. So we kind of advertise that as the best of the best of Missouri because it is a juried exhibit. Unlike our downstairs, our open division, anybody is open to that. It's open. If you enter work, you are in the show. So the Missouri 50 is a selected 50 works.
Okay. And we talked about hog intestines earlier. What kind of things are we actually seeing? I'm guessing that's not the norm of the type of art we're seeing here.
Oh, no. Well, you know, it may not be the norm, but we try to bring in all kinds of fun and interesting stuff like that. The norm would be the artists vary, of course. That's just art for you. I mean, you're always going to be seeing new and different things. So Nora Othick, she's a pastel artist. We're going to have her next week. And she does a lot of regional work. So she was one of our honorable mention winners in the Missouri 50, actually, for Cat Fight 3, a regional bar fight. It's a hilarious piece. And then she also had in the Missouri 50 Three Bulls. And that's one of her main staples of her work. So you see her demonstrating pastel work, working with things we see every day, you know, driving down our highways. Let's see, Scott Linson Bart, he's there right now doing watercolor work.
Okay.
All kinds of different stuff. So we don't typically have hog intestines in there, but we love it when we can find something neat and unusual like that because Vicky is about to lose her voice talking about that.
How long has art been a part of the fair, as far like a formal part like it is now?
For a long time.
Okay.
The Missouri 50, I know this is like their 26th year, somewhere around there, but the Fine Arts Building has been here for as long as I can remember and much longer before that. I mean, Mark, do you know how long the Fine Arts has been here?
I'm not sure when the Fine Arts Building was actually constructed. It's old,
yes.
As most of the facilities are out here. Our main row of buildings through here ranges from some of the barns, which were the very first, to some of the major structures like the varied industries next to us and the commercial building just up the road that were built in 1903. And you kind of go down the line, you know, 1906 at the Coliseum. So obviously the floriculture and fine arts buildings on the south side were built later, but I'm sure still built probably in the late 30s, 40s, in that range, somewhere in there. So They're old buildings. They're very nice, and obviously once they're set up for the fair each year, they're really unique. I think it makes a unique landscape or setting for what we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
How important is this variety of different events and different people that might come and be able to spend different, you know, hours in different locations and doing something completely different? How important is that to a state fair?
Well, I think it's very important. You know, the state fair is you know, owned by the citizens of the state of Missouri, and it's supposed to be for all people, you know, all citizens in Missouri. And so, you know, obviously you can't touch every niche that's out there in terms of what this person likes or that person likes or what they are interested in, but we have such a wide variety of opportunities to show or exhibit or you know, be in a contest with, whatever it may be, throughout the facility that, you know, you almost feel like there is something for everyone.
Sure. And David, one thing we didn't get to talk about earlier, but I wanted to ask you a little bit about, is some of the competitions that happen at the State Fair. We talked about livestock competitions, but there are also some stranger things that happen here as well, right?
Like rooster crowing contests, or...
that sounds like one of them I'd like to hear about, yeah.
It happens in the poultry building, and they see how many times they can get their rooster to crow in a set amount of time, and of course there's obviously different ways, I think, not physical, that they encourage that rooster to continue crowing. And so it can be, it's certainly interesting to watch, comical, but certainly some things happen. There's all different kinds of things that are not, you go over into the home ec building, and there's those daily contests over there. There's that mystery sack contest where different folks are selected, and they're given a sack of contents, and they have to prepare it into some kind of edible product within, like, I think 30 minutes time, isn't it? I think you've been one of those subjects, so I've been lucky enough to dodge that bullet so far. And there's all different kinds of things like that that are interesting.
Yeah, and I guess then for the regular competitions, for those livestock competitions, what is the difference between the hog that wins and the last place hog? I mean, would it be that obvious to someone who is not in the agriculture industry?
It certainly can be, and sometimes it's not. We provide the equal. What do you want to say? I want to say the equal show ring. You get the show ring, and then it's equal footing. Those kids or the adults, anybody that runs goes in there, and then it's up to the judge. And so it's one person's opinion one day. And so hopefully, what myself or Leon or any of the other superintendents look for is consistency in a judge, and then being able to explain that to the folks that are not only exhibiting but watching the show, why you picked that pig over that pig or this heifer over that one, so that they can follow you. And then what you see is you bring those by age division winners back in, you should see a consistent pattern of where he's going on those different species.
Right, so it's not all arbitrary, right? There are some physical, like,
absolutely,
benchmarks you're looking for,
absolutely,
right?
Absolutely, yeah. They're, it's very built on, and the cattle, they've got to be able to walk. They've got to be able to move around a pasture, cover a lot of ground, not only to feed themselves, but to find water, and it's just the reproductive traits that you look for in those heifers, whether, it's teat placement, same thing in gilts, in the hog. There are just a lot of pieces that judge is going to look at to put together. It's not all about how big it is or those things. It is about the complete package.
And for those presenters, and we talked about it with the FFA kids, but how important is this State Fair to say, I was first place?
It's huge. In my section, we have the largest State Fair Angus show in the United States is right here. So if you want to be the All-American Angus Bull in the United States, you're going to come show here because you need to have placed here somehow to earn those points. Hmm. We have a Shorthorn, another breed of cattle here, this is a point show for them. So we'll be drawing cattle in from as far away as Maine, New Hampshire, New Jersey, Wisconsin, all over the country. So it's a huge deal. We're probably one of the, I would say on the cattle side, one of the premier fairs that you want to attend. Genetic-wise, it's just huge.
Mm-hmm. And I suppose there's probably some financial incentives too, right? I mean, if you can say you won first place at a fair, you can maybe have an easier time selling your product, right?
Absolutely. It's about advertisement. I mean, if you have that first place heifer, that grand champion female or bull, it absolutely puts your genetics on the roadmap. And yeah, it is about advertisement, presentation of product, but it's also that fulfillment, probably lifetime goal of where you got your genetics to win the contest.
Okay, well, that is all the time we have for today's Intersection. I want to thank our guests, Missouri State Fair Director Mark Wolf, Livestock Superintendent David Dick, and Ashley Shane, the Superintendent of the Fine Arts Department at the Fair. We were joined earlier in the show by Miriam Martin, Mitchell Blem, and Leon Bustiker with the Missouri Chapter of Future Farmers of America. We'd like to remind those of you enjoying this as a rebroadcast that Intersection takes place live for a full hour from 2 to 3 every Monday afternoon. You can watch live streaming video of our program each Monday afternoon online at kbia.org. Alongside that video, you can submit your questions and comments and take part in an online discussion with others in the audience. You'll also find an archive of all of our past programs, including the full hour of today's conversation. Intersection is a broadcast from the Reynolds Journalism Institute and is a project of RJI and KBIA. Intersection is produced by Raymond Tungekar, Janet Saidi, and Ruben Stern. Travis McMillan is our technical director, with production assistance from Rachel Gangware and Andrew Yost. Casey Morell is our audio producer. Executive directors are Mike Dunn and Mike McKean. I'm Ryan Familiner. Thanks for joining us today, and have a great week.